Okay, this is another episode of Ivy's Podcast. This feels like I've been gone for a very long time. And I am joined by a guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Charmonique. I have a podcast called Catch These Vibes. And I'm here. We're going to talk about, I guess you're going to get into that.
Yeah.
I'll let you get into it.
Because knowing that you're probably one of the more vocal Scream fans out of my mutuals, I decided to bring you on so we can do kind of a revisited of kind of talking about all these movies in one big go. Because I've kind of talked about the first one in a review. I've kind of reviewed the fifth one last year, but I never kind of did the big picture. Mm-hmm. So I thought it'd be cool to bring you on so we can kind of have a cool discussion on that.
I am down. I love talking about Scream.
I do too. One of my favorites that ever came out. Do you remember when you first saw it?
Yes. I remember seeing the first one. I don't know. I had to have been like 6, 7, around that. Maybe 7 or 8. And I remember my parents, we went to the drive-in actually. And I remember being in the back seat, seeing it. So that's my first like memory of seeing the movie.
My God. I was one when the first movie came out. I didn't see it till like 08.
Oh, yeah.
It just happened to be on TV. And I still, no matter how many times I watch it, this thing still kind of gets me with looking at how they do the whole first scene with Drew Barrymore and how, for the most part, give or take, they kind of try to recreate it at times in the other sequels. It's never hit the same way as it does the first time. Even with, I think his name is Roger L. something, who does the voice of Ghostface. I think I was reading Roger L. Jackson. I was reading that he would do that. They actually would do the phone call live, and they didn't dub it in later. He would be in a separate monitor somewhere else. He'd be with a separate monitor in like a room somewhere, and he's recording his lines in real time. And the way that he goes from his voice being semi-charming to like frightening in the drop of a dime, it still gets me every single time, because no matter how many times I watch it, it never feels like he's getting ready to prepare to kill someone.
Right. Yeah, I love that too. I love the Ghostface voice. And I think the Drew Barrymore opening scene is the best one out of all of them. But I think 5 might be up there with it.
Five is good.
Yeah.
5 is really good. And of course, as we know, Drew Barrymore, they kind of built the whole marketing campaign around her. Mm-hmm. In an interesting way, they were kind of doing in the same vein as they did Janet Leigh in Psycho. But it just so happened to be by accident, because Wes Craven didn't want to do the movie until he found out Drew Barrymore was on board. Drew Barrymore happened to have a project that was a scheduling conflict. So she switched to having a role be Casey Becker, who we do know to die. So they kind of just still ran and said, hey, we're spending all this money on Drew Barrymore and she wants to be the one to die in the beginning. What are we doing that for? And they kind of made that whole cool thing. And I think I can say for me, it definitely works still. Mm-hmm. But I guess when I talked to my barber about it, because he was like a teenager when it came out, he's always big on saying that that was kind of like an opening scene that had everyone shook, because no one expected someone who was that big of a star at the time to die that early on.
Right. That is pretty crazy, because like she's a star and she ain't in the rest of the movie.
And so. her name is always still billed. I always make sure that I wasn't like tweaking or tripping out. I've watched it on DirecTV. I've watched it in our version of Time Warner Cable. I've watched it on AT&T U-verse. Her name is always billed at number one. So no matter what, even if you're watching it for the first time, like how I did, I'm seeing, starring Drew Barrymore, awesome. And I'm like, oh, wow, she died. I was like, dang.
It really worked. That was a good move, actually. Because
I'm kind of from the era where I saw a Scary Movie first. So I was one of those people. I happened to catch Scary Movie before I saw Scream. And Scary Movie to me was always super funny. I never thought I could take Ghostface seriously. And right. I was just in shock. I'm like, wow. He's killing some folks in this movie. It is kind of insane. It's insane to me. I think the cast is perfect, though. So let me see. I actually had an interesting topic on the cast. I believe I found out Matthew Lillard, he got the part of being Stu strictly because his girlfriend happened to be auditioning for a different movie that was there. And so he just kind of happened to walk in there and he got the part off of that. Jamie Kennedy, he was doing, I completely forgot he was in this movie. I forgot he did Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, I still haven't seen that.
I'm not a fan, but a lot of people love it. He happened to be in that movie, and he went through like a bunch of different variations of auditioning. And he was afraid that he wasn't going to get it because he had his hair dyed, and I guess Wes Craven kind of comes off like he's a serious person, so he didn't know if he was leaving a bad impression or not. He liked them off his ability to improvise. So that kind of pushed him up very high. Joaquin Phoenix was initially offered the role of Billy Loomis, and he declined. And that's how you did eventually get Skeet Ulrich. Because Skeet did the movie off the strength that he thought he was going to have his, I guess, Johnny Depp moment. Because Johnny Depp did Nightmare and ended up becoming a big star.
Yeah.
As we know, it did not turn out that way. But and I guess one last cool fact that I like about it is I think the set piece of the final where at the house where they had the house party at, how intricate it is, it lasts 42 minutes.
Right.
And then like if you watch it, you're like, this is like half the movie. It took them 21 days of shooting just to do that one set piece. It was so bad and long hours, they wear t-shirts to say, I survived scene 118.
Yeah, because so much happens while they're at that party. Like, so that's, I really do like the way they made it last like that or stretched it out so that we were able to see everything that happened, you know, once they got to the party. Because, I mean, a party, you already kind of feel like something's going to happen, especially with the fact that there's a killer right now. So
it has a lot of suspense in it.
Yeah.
It's between who all can I just say? It was just a lot that happened between Tatum dying. I didn't realize how just detailed it was, Gail and them setting up the cameras in the house to them. Gail and them setting up the cameras to the house, to Tatum dying, to everyone leaving the house party, to, I guess, Sydney and Billy having their little makeup sex moment or whatever. It's a lot that goes on in there, and I believe I was watching, I think it was like a year and a half ago, this YouTube channel called Dead Meat, they have a podcast together, and they're actually invited by, they're really good friends with Universal, they're invited by Universal to do some promotional videos to prepare for the Scream 5, so they actually went to the house that scene was shot at. It is not a set. I mean, it's a set, but it's like a legit house. It was an actual, like, functional house with the exact same. They did a tour throughout the whole house. There's like mapping everywhere. You can see exactly where every scene was shot. They took this house and they conducted it based off of kind of what that design looked like and not vice versa.
So do you know if like if we can go like so anybody could go tour it,
or are they just I think you can.
Cause I would want to do that.
I think you can. Let me see. I feel like you can.
That would be cool. They sure could get a lot of money off of that.
It's like it is legit. Yeah, it's a legit house. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, you can have a screen celebration at Stumacher's house.
This oh, is wow. On the Nerdist. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely visit this.
I had no idea.
They do it for their... Yeah. I'm trying to... I don't know if it's a directly through Universal. Oh, they turned it into an Airbnb. Of course they did. Of course they did. Of course they turned it into an Airbnb. What else
would you do? Wow. That's probably super expensive a night.
Oh, for sure.
Crazy.
It's definitely, if it's not expensive, it's one of those things like you have to book the moment it opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of else do I have to say about the first one? Outside of, it was actually inspired by a true story from Kevin Williamson. I guess it was called The Gainesville Ripper. In the early 90s, and it took place over the course of a few days, just like this one did, except it was throughout I believe it was throughout a university. I don't remember what college exactly it was, but that story definitely inspired him to create it. And one more interesting tidbit of this, and it explains why I didn't see her much after this. She said the one thing, Neve Campbell said that she had to keep declining to do more horror movies because after Scream came out, they kept calling her. And she did not want to be categorized as Scream Queen. And she didn't want to be typecasted. So it's funny that she didn't want to be typecasted, but she went on to do 5 movies. And almost 6. If they actually just paid her salary. She said they kept trying to lowball her salary for Scream 6, and she was like, I'm kind of in the face of this franchise. I feel like I should be paid.
Right. I don't know why I thought, because I remember that was happening, but then I thought something, maybe I thought that they like were able to come to terms that she liked, and maybe she, I don't know, maybe I made that up, but I do remember her saying they weren't going to, you know, offering her the money that she wanted. So that's, but. I don't know. I'm just one of those people where I'm like, she needs to be in the movie, but I guess I just gotta let it go.
Yeah, but also it's like, just pay her the money, yo.
Yeah, like come on, like.
Because if you got a Jamie Lee Curtis, sir, because everybody knows Jamie Lee didn't want to do another Halloween movie, but they threw a bag. So of course she's gonna come back. They threw a bag. Another interesting tidbit that I think is very funny. I almost forgot this one, and it makes me laugh because I'm like, damn, they fuck him up in every single movie anytime they get the chance to. Dewey was supposed to die in the first movie.
Every single movie.
He was supposed to die. And I think they came to realize, I don't know if it was through test screenings and people just happened to like Dewey a lot more than they thought, or if Wes Craven just had a change of heart. And they decided, like, hey, when you wheel him out there, make sure you have David Arquette give, like, a knowing thumbs up so that he survived. And do I really care that much that Dewey lived? Not really. Not really, because, like, the moment he lived, it's like you just completely forgot about... He completely forgot about, like, all the trauma that he went through. His sister dying, all of that shit. You just kind of forget about it until they mention it in the 5th movie. But he could have just died. He could have just died.
You think so? You don't think that would have changed the trajectory of the movie? Because I feel like a good chunk of it is about Gale and Dewey. Like, they have so many.
And they have they started their own romance because of that movie. So it definitely did. Not saying the franchise would have been the same without Gale, but I think just happens that nothing in the movie would have changed if he didn't live.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Because it's one of those. Because even the second movie, I'm gonna get to that one later. But it's like they don't give him anything to do in most of these movies. He's just kind of there to do something.
Oh,
I said, "Mate, we'll figure out what to do with him at some point." But overall, this is probably not even probably. This will always be my favorite of the franchise. I think it's one of those things where it's one of those things where horror kind of did get stale in the late 80s, early 90s. Well, the slashers at least got stale.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of take this, you kind of just take this thing where you just see, like, you just take a very typical thing where it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of a satire of, it's kind of like a meta commentary and satire of the slasher genre. You don't put that much effort into the mask because you just happen to find it, like, on the shooting location. Like, hey, this is cool. Where can we get the rights to this at? And you turn this into a horror icon. That's something rare that you, that's one of those things rare that you'll never really see be recreated ever again. They've tried it with The Faculty. They've tried it with Last House on the Left. They tried it with I Know What You Did Last Summer. Both were written by Kevin Williamson. It just never holds up the same way that Scream does. And this is, if I were to give it out of 10, it's a 10. It's truly a 10. Even everything is perfect. Even something as simple as the principal getting killed. The reason they have him get killed that early, one, because Wes Craven didn't feel like anybody died. He says, according to runtime, it's been a long time since someone has died. And two, for continuity purposes, because Henry Winkler is only going to be there for like a day. And they shot and filmed all the scenes. So they had to find a way to realistically get everybody out the house. So they turned back, said, okay, let's kill two birds with one stone. Let's get him. Everything's just perfect. Even with the stuntmen I think it was like three guys who wore the costume of Ghostface. Even them, like the whole, which is now his trademark, in the same way that you'd see the Michael Myers head tilt, the wiping the blade of the blood, that was just an idea from one of the stuntmen to keep from having continuity errors. Because if you're constantly editing, you're taking shots from different takes. You didn't want to have a situation where, for those who don't know, you don't have a situation like the Ray J hat where you keep cutting and it's something completely different. You didn't want to see a bloody knife on one shot and the next is like it's gone. So they started doing that for that purpose. I think they put a lot of time and care into this. And I think that is something that